Merry Christmas and happy holidays, and welcome to the 150th episode of the Supernatural Occurrence Studies Podcast.
So damn paranormal. I don't feel like swearing when you say happy holidays at the top.
My name is Jason Knight, host of the show, and with me, as always, is...
Oscar Spector. Happy holidays.
The polite producer extraordinaire and podcast co-host. So, Oscar, what has been going on over this last month since recording?
I mean, not a lot, unfortunately. Nothing to report necessarily. I would say that one thing is that this feels like the 151st episode. I don't know why. I'm just gonna have to bear with me on that one, guys. It just feels like we're a number below where we are. Okay. Nothing. What's been going on? Let's see. Not just getting ready for holidays, I guess. You know, but for me, holidays mean work. Means work for me. You know, not a whole lot of changes other than it gets worse. Just gets busier on holidays, right, on my end. You know, there's no time off. Last time I enjoyed actual holidays, I guess, was when I used to go to school. And school time was off, right, at this time. And yeah. You could actually have the time off and stuff. So not to be all downy, Debbie Downy on it. I'm just saying that, no, I'm kind of just been working. Like today, I'll work a little later. But yeah, it's been an okay day, an okay time. Playing some games, watching some movies, getting ready for the end of the year list. It's the craziest time of the year for me for that.
Oh, the movie end of the year top 10s, right?
Yeah, top 10 movies of the year. Don't ask me. I have no idea. I wrote down all the movies I watched, and I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to whittle this down. Yeah. It's all right. Just going to leave it. And that's been just chilling around, man. How about you?
It, kind of the same here. Just busy with work as always, but you know, having kids. Yeah. I mean, we're in that magical moment right before Christmas. Today's their last day of school. And they're just so excited. And it's really cool to just sit back and take that in as parents, because we don't enjoy it that much anymore. It's always very busy and hectic, like you said. But just seeing the look on the kids' faces and feeling that anticipation, it's awesome. And, we're also planning a vacation immediately after Christmas. We're heading down to Florida to do some dolphin swimming and going to Disney and all sorts of cool stuff. So we're really looking forward to that. Time off of work, just being as a family.
Are you planning on for Christmas itself, before you leave, are you planning on making something, baking something, cooking something?
Yeah, so Christmas Eve, my son, he's in a musical for CCD class. That's religious education class. For people who don't know, it's to get him ready to make his first communion. Mm-hmm. He's playing one of the three kings in that show, so we're really excited about that.
Christmas. Is it the first, second, or third?
I believe he's the third.
Okay.
And I want to say it's like Balthazar or something like that. Yeah, that's the last, right? I looked this up when we first found out about it. I think it's like King Balthazar or something. But when we come home, I'm making a nice Wiener Schnitzel and Spätzle for the family and my mom, which I do pretty good at, I think. And then Christmas Day, it's just hectic. Get up, open gifts, go to the in-laws, come back home, cook a dinner for my family. I'm not looking forward to that one at all, but
the your family part,
just having to go and have a Christmas and then come home and create a Christmas later that night.
I see what you mean.
It's going to be challenging, but hey, those are the holidays for adults.
Yeah. All right.
But yeah, other than that, nothing else really to report.
Sounds cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, I guess I should have mentioned, if you want to skip the intro, timestamp in the show notes, I forgot to mention that.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, it's fine.
It's Christmas. I mean,
it's Christmas. It's been hectic. We're a little out of practice. It feels that way anyway. And it strangely feels like I'm in a Groundhog Day scenario right now. I feel kind of like Bill Murray right now, actually.
Should we mention it?
You can mention it, yeah.
So... last night, Oscar and I were up very late recording this exact same episode. Uh-huh. And we get to the end of it. I think it went really well. And we get to the end of it. And I realized I didn't hit record.
No, the lens cap was on. The lens cap was on the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's like lost. it's like we got a Martin Scorsese in 1990 making Goodfellas, and we do that one shot through the whole nightclub, yeah. Right through the kitchen, and Ray Liotta nails it. Everyone's in a good mood. It's like the seventh time. They all want to go to sleep, but they just, you know, it's a good time. We make it, and the camera guy goes, oh, the lens cap was on.
Exactly the same.
And Marty's like, that was a perfect shot. How was it? Like,
how do we tell him this?
How do we tell him? Yeah.
So here we go. Take two. So to your point, Oscar, a little bit rusty, I guess, being off the mics for so long.
I guess so. Right.
I do want to mention really quickly that we have received quite a bit of feedback on Instagram and Facebook from listeners who are okay with the format change that we made. They understand that it had to be done to keep the quality of the show up, and they were supportive. Yeah. Supportive was the word I was looking for. So definitely thank them for that. Yeah.
That is super awesome. You know, that reminds me of something else. I had feedback of a personal nature for the show. Meaning people that I know that actually listen to the damn show. It's hard to, you have family and friends, sure, but trust me, when you're a podcaster, they rarely have ever listened to it. But the one of few that do really suggested, has told me through two or three different occasions already, like, are you going to make, because I mentioned that one idea many shows ago this year, how maybe I should make some of our shows, curate them for like a TikTok video or something, because some of them can't be translated into that, you know, not so much others, but some do. And she was like, are you gonna do that yet? She's excited for, like, wants me to do it. I'm like, I haven't started yet. I don't know which one, but maybe. So and that's not just one, two people that told me that. Somebody asked me that about if I'm doing that, and I'm like, I would be interested. It's just I know it's gonna be a lot of work, and it's extra work that I don't need to do, so I'm just not gonna rush it.
Well, it's good to know people are interested in that sort of a setup. That's cool.
Right, exactly. So anyway, so I mentioned that.
Give them what they want. Let them eat cake.
Oh, is that a Marie Antoinette and or listen, something?
Yes, eat your cake and listen to the podcast too.
Mm-hmm. All right. So how will they ever reach us, Jay, if they even want to?
Yes. So the
minus easiest the phone number, way, of course.
No phone number, right? The easiest way to contact the Supernatural Occurrence Studies podcast is by visiting our brand new website, ChicagoGhostPodcast.com. From ChicagoGhostPodcast.com, you get to all of our social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and of course, Patreon. And in case you did not know, the Supernatural Occurrence Studies podcast is on Patreon, and for just $5 a month, you get access to a library of Patreon-only exclusive audio and video content. That's content that'll never be shared here in our public feed. Go to the show notes of this episode, click on the Patreon link, or simply visit patreon.com/Supernatural Occurrence Studies podcast and pledge your support for your favorite show. We also have some cool swag that comes along with your patronage as well. And speaking of Patreon, I do want to give a shout out to our brand new Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man level patron, General Lee from the UK. So thank you very much for supporting the podcast, General Lee. General is also a podcast host. I want to make sure and mention this. It's the Subconscious Realms podcast.
Yeah.
You can find them on Spotify if you love conspiracy and aliens and cryptozoology and anything weird and unusual. Definitely check them out. And while you're on Spotify, give them a rating. Spotify has a brand new rating system, so please rate Subconscious Realms. And if you listen to our show on Spotify, please do the same. We need some love on Spotify. You could reach the podcast by calling a phone number. I hear.
No, rumor. You can't. Rumor has it. You can't. Rumor. Is that from Adele? Adele something?
Okay. I Adele'd it.
You Adele'd it. Okay, go ahead.
872-529-0767. That's Chicago area code, 872-529-0767. Leave us a message. Send us a text. We'll read them and play them on the
show.
I'm
not awake enough to argue with you on this one, okay? Not awake
damn,
yet.
Damn, he's just going to let it go.
Yeah, this time. Don't get used to it, folks.
Now, before we go to break, Oscar, I do just want to mention, this is a show about a cannibal. This is not going to be a pretty show. So I'm giving people fair warning right now. Stop eating. Don't do anything like that while you're listening to this episode.
Wow, interesting. We're doing a cannibal, huh? Cannibal, first of all, did not predict that. Did not see that coming, first of all. secondly, is it like a Christmas cannibal? Like a guy who ate people in Christmas, maybe? Or is it a Santa Claus that went crazy one time? Or is it a...
No, it's just...
Nothing related? Nothing festive?
Nothing festive at all.
At all, okay.
Other than I'm bringing some depraved shit to our listeners for Christmas.
Is this like your revenge for having to cook Christmas, make Christmas into food?
The world will suffer.
Right, exactly. Okay. All right, be warned, guys.
So with that, let's take a quick break.
Let's do it.
Listeners, welcome back to the show. Well, the lights are turned down low. The ceremonial candle is lit and the drinks are flowing. Let's start this show. So, Issei Sagawa, also known as the Kobe Cannibal or just pang, like a sudden overwhelming urge or feeling, like hunger pangs, is a Japanese murderer, necrophile, and cannibal, a nice little trifecta of fuckery, who killed and ate a woman in Paris, France in 1981. Now, I say Issei Sagawa is a Japanese murderer, necrophile, and cannibal instead of was, because this guy, despite his absolutely appalling crime, is alive and not so well in the suburbs of Tokyo today, hobbling along as a free man. And believe it or not, for a time, Issei Sagawa even gained minor celebrity status, cult-like status, based exclusively on the terrible crimes he committed. And Oscar, he even did a stint in porn. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Now, I just want to again issue a warning. This is a pretty nasty episode. I'm calling it a red band episode. So listeners, beware. The things Sagawa did to his victim are atrocious, acts born in hell. And the fact that Sagawa got off with little more than a slap on the wrist is just unbelievable. Actually, it's hard to believe this story actually happened, that this is a true story, but it is. Now, be sure to check the show notes because we've left a lot of pictures that coincide with this episode. Pictures of Issei Sagawa, pictures of his victim, and some crime scene photos. And Oscar, I really had some trouble with these crime scene photos. I went back and forth with myself trying to decide if I should include them because they do.
Like it wasn't like picking your favorite out.
No favorites in this. Okay. No, I just went back and forth trying to decide if I should even put them in there because they do exist. Unfortunately, I've seen them. What I decided to do is include some of the crime scene photos, but not all. I'm not going to include photos of the victim herself, or more like what remained of the victim after Sagawa was done with her. The photographs of Sagawa's handiwork are so fucking brutal. Just if you really want to see them, use Google. Unfortunately, they're all too easy to find. But be warned, you can't unsee them. Hmm. Now, Issei Sagawa was born on April 26th, 1949, in Kobe, Japan, on the southern side of the island of Honshu. Now, astute listeners might recognize the island of Honshu because on the northwestern side of the island, about a five-hour drive from Kobe, lies the notorious Aokigahara Forest, which we covered in episode 148.
Yeah, not too long ago.
Right.
That's two episodes ago. Wow. Yeah.
Now, Issei Sagawa's crimes have nothing to do with Aokigahara Forest, like he didn't kill there or anything, but Sagawa once told a documentary film crew from Vice.com that Aokigahara has breathtaking scenery and that if he could drive, he would go there and kill himself. So our cannibal Sagawa was well aware of Aokigahara, the suicide forest, and the legends surrounding it. I just thought that was a nice little tie-in to our Aokigahara episode, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. So like I said, Issei Sagawa, the Kobe Cannibal, was born on April 26, 1949 in Kobe, Japan, hence the Kobe Cannibal. Mm-hmm. Now, as a child, Isisagawa was very unhealthy. He was born premature, and it said that as a newborn, he was so small that he could fit in the palm of his father's hand. Could you imagine a kid being that small?
I can, actually. I was a preemie.
You were a preemie?
Oh, yeah.
All these years, I had no idea.
I never mentioned it. I mean, it's not like I opened up, hi, I'm Oscar. No. I was a preemie. I mean, it's hard for that to come out. You know what I mean? You have to find, there's no topic of preemie. Anyway, whatever. I was, and I heard stories like my father would put me in the inside pocket of his jacket in the winter.
Oh, my God. Is that adorable?
I mean, I can only imagine. I've never seen a picture. And they also would put me in shoeboxes.
I want an Oscar in a shoebox.
No, no, you don't. Apparently, we're very expensive and limited, apparently. Unlimited type.
And so, fragile, yeah. I would assume.
Probably.
Quite fragile.
I caused my mom a lot of problems, but I wasn't like a, it wasn't like a preemie with all these other complications. There were some, I'm sure, but nothing to worry about. They've told me, but I was just, I was a few weeks or a month, maybe. I don't know.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I learned something new every day. I did not know that.
Yep. So I'm like this guy, basically.
Oscar and the cannibal, one and the
right.
same.
Right. One and the same. We're basically, that's how it starts. Right.
That's
first sign. First sign.
Oh, God. So we're going to get a lot of hate mail from people who were born premature. We are not
because I'm one. It's like, it's like if I'm Hispanic, I can make Hispanic jokes. That's the same thing. I can make preemie jokes.
Damn, a whole new world just opened up.
The whole new joke set.
So, our cannibal Issy, he was premature, but not only was he premature, he was also born with something called enteritis, a disease of the small intestine. Now, common side effects of enteritis are diarrhea, vomiting, loss of appetite, and fever. It's a lot like food poisoning, actually. Now, in adults, enteritis can be treated fairly easily with lots of rest and lots of fluid to prevent dehydration. I've had food poisoning a few times. It was really bad and I wanted to die, but in a day or so, I was over it and on my way, right? However, in newborns, especially when premature, enteritis could be very dangerous, even fatal. Not eating, not gaining weight, vomiting, diarrhea, temperature fluctuations, intestinal perforations, and blood infections are all potential side effects of infant enteritis. Now, with Issy, he received potassium and chloride and saline injections, and he was cured of the enteritis. But at the early age of 2, Isisagawa contracted Japanese encephalitis, a very dangerous viral brain infection, and the most prevalent and significant mosquito-borne viral encephalitis of man. Japanese encephalitis targets the central nervous system, and its clinical side effects are fever, headache, vomiting, seizures, meningeal irritation, or the irritation of the membranes that cover the brain and spinal cord, and interestingly, abnormal behavior and altered consciousness. Lifelong effects of Japanese encephalitis include deafness, weakness on one side of the body, and uncontrollable emotions. Very interesting.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. Now, apparently for Issy, his Japanese encephalitis was so severe that he almost died from it. And both childhood illnesses, the enteritis and the encephalitis, resulted in Issy being incredibly short, thin, weak, sickly, and withdrawn for the rest of his life. These traits haunted him. In fact, as a full-grown adult, when he committed his heinous act, Isisagawa stood under 5 feet tall, 4'9", according to most sources. Not the imposing monster you might think he was, considering what he did. In fact, Issy described himself as looking more like a little monkey than a human. But Issy, despite his physical shortcomings, he was intelligent. He did great in school, earning a master's degree, and he was working on his PhD when he committed his cannibal crimes. Hmm. This guy had a thirst for knowledge, especially literature. And just so you know, listeners, there's going to be a lot of unintended puns in this episode. Thirst for literature. You've been warned. Now, as far as his family is concerned, and this will be important later, Issei Sagawa's family was affluent. They had money. Issei's father, Akira, was the president of Kurita Water Industries. And Issei's grandfather had been editor for the Asahi Shimbun, one of the four largest newspapers in Japan. Generational wealth, right?
Yeah, right.
Now, unfortunately, I couldn't find a lot of information on Issei's mother. Most articles just stating that she had this tendency of being what's known as a dragon mother. Overprotective, overbearing, and strict. All with good intentions, of course, but a huge bite in the ass nonetheless. See? Pun.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to digest this, Jay.
A lot of what I read about Issei's mother talked about how she would force feed her infant son in hopes of fattening him up to make him healthy. Even here in the States, there was a time when it was thought that a fat kid was a healthy kid. And such was the case with Issei's mother.
Yeah, I've heard those things. Like, it's like when you hear that in medieval times or not that long ago, maybe less than that, it would be like, I remember now. In that movie Spencer, I saw they did this thing where like they weighed the royal family when they come in for Christmas week or weekend. Yeah. And they were expected to gain a certain amount of pounds. That would mean that you honorably like enjoyed the food.
Wow.
Like they would weigh you on the way out. And then hopes that there would be like an extra 5-3 pounds, whatever they wanted. That was like a common thing back then.
Yeah. The fat, chubby, healthy baby. Right. I mean, that was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with Izzy's mother, according to Issei, this force feeding, her obsession with food equaling health actually helped fuel his cannibalistic desires. And really, over the years, Issei has given numerous reasons as to why he developed this unnatural, all-consuming urge to eat flesh. An urge, he says, that began to develop when he was just in first grade. When a male classmate's exposed milky white thigh made Issei think, that looks delicious. And those are Issei's words, not mine.
That's some early shit, though. Yeah.
Really, really early.
Yeah.
So Issei recalls his mother's force feeding. And he also recalls this game his uncle would play with Issei and his younger brother, Jun, during which his uncle would dress up as a monster while Issei and his younger brother, Jun, played as knights. And the little knights would fight the monster. And if the kids lost, the monster would place the children literally into a large pot for stewing and eating as punishment for losing the make-believe battle. Now, this game was intended to be fun, innocent, a little rough role-playing, you know, roughhouse role-playing between uncle and children. The uncle meant nothing bad by this, but for Issei, the thought of eating human flesh, even at a young age, was fascinating. And it would stick with him, consume him, pun, for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and not to mention that when you combine all these things, like, you know, the very nature of having a human stew, but as a fun activity, like you associate fun with it, you know?
Yes.
Like
kind of,
you know what I'm saying? Like it's playful, it's not whatever. And then, yeah. I mean, I can see.
Now, he also says that as a child, he loved fairy tales about people being eaten. And he especially loved the story of Hansel and Gretel being drawn to the cannibalistic witch, right?
Of course.
The witch liked to fatten up kids and then she'd eat them. Loved it. He loved this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's think about this for a second. Isn't it interesting, even terrifying, to think about how much power adults, parents, or uncles in this case, have over children and how they develop? Even if we don't realize it, those little things we do as adults, our little isms, or the games we play, the books we read, the words and phrases we use, completely innocent things, how those things can be easily misconstrued and twisted in such a way that they could negatively impact a little developing brain forever. I mean, look at Issei and the monster game, the fairy tales, his mother's feeding. None of these things were done with bad intentions. Yet look what Issei remembers and the feelings those actions stirred in him, even as a child, and how he turned out. I'm no child psychologist, but man, I guess we never really know how much we're fucking up our kids. It's scary.
No. Nope. You'll never know either. Some stuff, most parents will never know. Like they won't, have these signs like, oh, my kid's eating people. I know where I fucked up. Like, it's more, that's clear cut. You can go back and like, red flag there. Okay, red flag there. Oh, yeah, that eighth birthday, of course.
How could I forget?
How could I forget that day? But this, you know, like most people don't know like how they're fucking them up. Like,
that's right.
That one thing you said because you were just annoyed and was offhand, but it's forever embedded in that child's brain in the adult side. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And as a parent, that terrifies me, you know?
Right. You don't know. You probably already instilled them with shit that you'd rather not, but
no doubt.
No control. Yeah, no way to know how it happened, right?
Yeah, it'll come out in therapy in like 30 years, you know?
Right, on your deathbed, they'll tell you, like, remember that one fucking time, Dad? Yeah.
It is terrifying.
It's a little terrifying.
Anyway, Issy also talks about the media and its representation of Western women for contributing to his budding cannibalistic fantasies.
Oh, Hollywood, huh?
Nice. The media always portraying Western women as healthy, vibrant, tall, voluptuous, fit, beautiful. Exactly everything Issy Sagawa wasn't. In his mind, and he's probably right, sickly, creepy Issy could never land a woman like that, a Western goddess, a woman with which he could develop the kind of physical intimacy that could temper, maybe even completely douse his cannibal desires. So Issy decided that the only way he could have a beautiful woman was to eat her. And with that, for Issy Sagawa, cannibalism and sexual desire became dangerously mixed, one and the same. To give an example of how cannibalism and sex mixed into a single monstrous urge, here's a quote from Issy normalizing his desire to consume flesh. Quote, "It's simply a fetish. For example, if a normal man fancied a girl, he'd naturally feel desire to see her as often as possible, to be close to her, to smell her and kiss her, right? To me, eating is just an extension of that. Frankly, I can't fathom why everyone doesn't feel this urge to eat, to consume other people." End quote. Frankly, I can't understand why someone would purposely break one of society's most deep-rooted taboos, eating another human. But hey, that's just me.
I mean, I have the same issue with other things that are completely normal. Like, I don't know why this guy, why would they want this? Why would this person, why would this type want this exactly every time? But it's like he treats it like that, like not just like a fetish, but almost like a preference. It's like on his dating profile, he wants the little box that says cannibal. Like he wants it. He wants to normalize like that. That's how he's talking about it.
It's not on Plenty of Fish. You can't check that.
Is that still around?
I'm sure. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Swipe right for cannibal. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Swipe right.
So there's a lot of stuff going on here, right? We have Issy's severe childhood ailments. We have this idea of eating, consuming equals health. Games where the loser was cooked and eaten. Cannibal-like fairy tales. And the media's portrayal of Western women. The question must be asked, was Issy Sagawa's obsession with eating human flesh created? Was his environment to blame? Or was Issy Sagawa born a cannibal? Was there something in the Sagawa DNA that pretty much guaranteed Issy would be the ultimate sexual deviant? Now, of course, I don't have the answer, and neither does Issy. He doesn't know why he turned out the way he did. Nor did the shrink Issy went to see at the age of 15, to whom he confessed his urge to eat women. He wanted to understand it, but the shrink pretty much just ignored him and sent him on his way. After which, Issy sank even deeper into himself and into his fantasies. It's the whole nature versus nurture thing, right? Was Issy made a cannibal?
Yeah.
Or was he born a cannibal? Now, one thing I can tell you is that Issy looks back at his childhood fondly. He says that his parents loved him deeply and raised him lovingly, his words. He never mentions anything specifically unusual or dark happening to him as a child that might have triggered such a dark obsession within him. And at the time in Japan, talking openly about sex was taboo. So Issy never heard his parents talk about it. They never even mentioned the word sex. Unfortunately, the secrecy surrounding sex left Issy unprepared for changes that come with growing older. For example, when he got his first erection, he thought something was wrong with him, that he was sick. He didn't know about masturbation or even how to masturbate. He had desires, as every growing boy does, totally normal. He just didn't know how to safely satisfy them. So he let a dog satisfy them. Use your imagination on that one.
Yeah, but it's funny how he relates them positively. Like, how many serial killers would look back into their childhood, and whether or not they wanted to admit it to themselves, is very negative. It's very bad, or absent maybe, or like they focus on the one bad time in their family's life versus, you know, maybe other good parts. You know, but this guy is like strangely more open and kind of the nicest cannibal. I don't know.
He's a very the nicest cannibal.
You know, like he's just like, it's just me, guys. Bro.
This is me. This is who I am.
Well, I want to chew you, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, it just seems over cool. I don't know. Not cool. It's not cool, but he seems cool about it. Like, it's just, it's weird, like, to hear a cannibal be like, yeah, my life was
Perfectly normal. Yeah, parents were great. They raised me loving.
You never put those two together, you know?
So, you know, the strange thing here is, yeah, he let a dog satisfy him, you know, but, and that's when, as he says, his sexual desires began to distort, you know, after this dog experience, they started twisting. See, parents, talk to your kids about sex, all of it. Don't let them figure it out on their own or else they're going to grow up to eat someone. I'm kidding, of course, but I think it's important kids know what to expect. Those feelings, desires, the bodily changes are all normal. And most importantly, they need to know the safest way to deal with those things. Ignoring isn't the answer. All right, yeah. I'm off my soapbox. But still, in Izzy's case, I have a really hard time making the connection between him letting a dog satisfy him to fucking full-blown murder, necrophilia, and cannibalism. I just can't see that leap. How does that leap come in? Now, here's something to think about. A little bit of, woo-hoo, hold on a minute, information. Remember I mentioned very briefly that Izzy had a younger brother named June?
Yeah, June, yeah.
Well, as it turns out, June is a little more than fucked up in the old sex department, too. You see, June grew up to be a hardcore masochist. The only way he could achieve pleasure is through his own extreme pain. Mm-hmm. To get off, he does shit like stab himself, burn himself, or wrap himself in barbed wire, those little razors tearing at his flesh, making him bleed.
Yeah, like no man's land. You know, that's what they put between, right?
Yeah, but on the DMZ, right?
On the DMZ, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, to June, this is ecstasy. I swear to God, it's like the fucking Hellraiser family over here. But it's the same thing with June Sagawa. He doesn't have the slightest idea why he turned out the way he did.
Are we going to give them names? Like Hellraiser names?
Oh, man.
There's the disc girl or the this guy. There's a pinhead, of course. There's so many of them. You just gotta give them names.
Yeah. Muncher,
right.
Muncher
I
forgot the names. Flesh terror. I don't know.
It's like the creepy dark version of the Christmas reindeer names, you know.
There's our Christmas tie-in. You're welcome.
That's it. That's why I'm looking for one desperately, and I found one finally. you know, the thing with June makes a little more sense. Not to me personally. I'm just saying the masochism thing. There's a lot of that, a lot more of that, a lot more openness about that today than obviously back then. But you know, that adding that to, with the nature of like the repressed culture that they were in, makes sense that he would be that extreme to himself with the barbed wire, like you said.
No
so
shit.
Like, it's like, yeah, nowadays it's like there's safer ways for sure, not permanent damage kind of ways that people find. That's really interesting to read. But like, it's more common now. It's always been common, but like, it's where you come from originally. Like, that makes it either extreme, bad for you or not, or maybe not so bad for you, depending. With him, I think it is pretty bad, but that's extreme. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I just want to mention that.
Mm-hmm. No, but I mean, what are the chances, right? One brother killed and ate a woman and the other can't come unless he's in extreme pain. Nature, nurture, right? I just thought the fact that his brother also developed something abnormal was incredibly interesting. Okay. Sure. So as he's walking around, he's going to school, doing his weird little thing. He actually winds up attaining a master's degree in English literature at a university in Tokyo. And nobody knows it, but all the while his urges to consume are just growing. And Izzy's beast just couldn't be contained anymore. it was time to finally fulfill his ultimate dark desire. You see, Issy had become absolutely obsessed with eating a Nordic or German woman. Tall, white, blonde hair, blue eyes, just the epitome of female physical perfection, right?
White meat.
According to white meat. White meat, exactly.
Right.
And it's while he's in Tokyo studying at university that a beautiful, tall German woman catches his eye. Actually, it was her white thighs that really grabbed Issy's attention. And that was it. She'd be the one. Issy would show her how much he loved her by consuming her. But not all of her. Issy just wanted to slice off a piece of her butt to eat. That was it. Couldn't he just have that little taste of creamy white butt meat? Now, one day, Issy followed the woman home, and he stalked her for a time, watching her through her first floor apartment's windows. Undoubtedly, Issy's thoughts would have caused the devil to blush as he stood there salivating on the other side of the window pane, watching his meal move about and sleeping naked. On the night Issy decided to make his move, he waited until the women went to bed, and then he snuck into her apartment. His plan was to hit the woman over the head with an umbrella, knock her out, not kill her, just knock her out. Then he would grab a knife from her kitchen and secure the meat he was after.
Right.
Issy slowly snuck towards the woman's bed. He loomed over her, but he accidentally bumped into her with his knee. The woman jumped up, screamed, and jumped out of bed and shoved Izzy's bitch ass down to the floor.
He's only four. He's like 5 foot nothing, right?
He's 4'9". So the woman whipped his ass. Yeah. He fled, but he was soon arrested and charged with attempted rape. The police completely unaware of Issy's true intentions. Now, Issy Sagawa was never charged for this attempted rape because his wealthy father, Akira, paid the woman off. He bribed her just to go away. And she did.
Okay, yeah. I can see that.
Now imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say that I didn't want to spoil that part of the story because I knew you were being serious. But like, I just thought of funny things the whole time. Like, like an umbrella.
Yeah. Yep. That was. Yeah. I think that was his own words.
And then when you were like talking about how he was salivating, stalking her and shit, I'm imagining him with those rod things where they sharpen the knives. Like he's getting.
Oh, like the old barbers. Like
the sharpening strap. Well, the chef uses two different metal prongs. I don't know what they're called. Okay, I'm sorry. And he does that ding ding ding, you know, right before cutting into the meat. I'm like, that's what I'm imagining while you're talking. I'm like, this is a cartoon villain. Sorry.
When I was scripting that part, you know who I had in my mind? Who? The wolf from the Tom and Jerry cartoons.
That's a good one. That's a very good one.
In my mind.
Very good one. And they're both around the same size.
Yeah. Now, so the father came in, bribed the woman, and she did. She went away, and he wasn't charged. Now, imagine what would have happened if Issy was charged. Would he have done time and gotten the help he clearly desperately needed? Would he have ever gone to France? Would his victim still be alive? Who knows? But the father offering the bribe, bad move. Bad, bad move. Now, on April 26, 1977, when he was 28 years old, Issy Sagawa left Tokyo and headed to Paris. Whether he left on his own accord or it was his father encouraging him to go away, either to let things calm down or from the embarrassment of having a son that was a rapist waiting to happen, or both, I'm not sure. But either way, Paris is where Issy would become the cannibal he always wanted to be, was obligated to be, as he put it.
Obligated. Huh?
Now in Paris, Issy became a student at Sorbonne University, working on a PhD in comparative literature. Dork. It's here at the
Sorbonne. No, that's a very bougie school, right?
It is a bougie school, and it just seems like a bougie major, you know. But it's here at the university that Issy would meet his victim. After an exhaustive run of bringing prostitutes home to his apartment almost every night with the very real intention of killing and eating them, fortunately, Issy chickened out each time. He just couldn't go through with it. That's when he set his sights on a beautiful, 25-year-old Dutch woman and fellow student named Renee Hartevelt. Issy befriended Renee, and the two spent quite a bit of time together. She ate dinner at his apartment a number of times. And at one of these little dinner dates at Izzy's apartment, Issy actually tried to kill Renee when she wasn't looking, but the gun he intended to use jammed, so he gave up for the evening.
Wow.
Still, he slowly built her trust, and you can say that Issy and Renee became pretty good friends. All the while, Renee had absolutely no idea about Issy's true intentions for their relationship, or that she had already narrowly escaped death once.
Right.
So on the night of June 11th, 1981, Issy Sagawa once again invited Renee Hartevelt up to his apartment for dinner and some schoolwork. He lied and told Renee that one of his professors wanted some German poetry recorded. That was the pretext Issy used to get Renee to his apartment that night, that and dinner. And poor Renee didn't suspect a thing. Issy chose the poetry. Renee took a seat at Issy's desk and began reciting the poetry into a recorder. Her back was to Issy. As Issy was smiling and talking to her from behind, unbeknownst to Renee, he grabbed a .22 caliber long rifle. He took aim and pulled the trigger and shot Renee right in the back of the head, close to the neck.
Really?
She never saw it coming, and that's probably a good thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess. Oh, man. Okay, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead. Okay. I'll tell you later.
Now, Issy claims that for a few seconds after being shot, Renee kept talking. But then she eventually collapsed onto the desk and then fell to the ground along with the chair she was sitting on. Issy placed a towel under her head and then undressed her. And here's where we're going to get into red band territory. If you're easily offended or have a weak stomach, please do yourself a favor. Skip ahead a few minutes.
Why are you still here is my question.
Why? What are you still doing here? Right. Because this gets really ugly, listeners. Okay. I better not get any hate mail because I'm giving you fair warning. This next part is bad. After stripping Renee naked, Issy had sex with her corpse, and then he began to feed on her. He had it all planned out, where he would start eating, and he took pictures of the entire process, and the pictures are fucking disgusting. He started with her butt, because to Issy, that meat looked most delicious. It had to be the right cheek, though, not the left, because the right cheek is further away from the heart and would therefore bleed less.
Okay.
Now, obviously, this isn't true. Issy had no idea how the body works.
It doesn't sound true.
But Issy said he wanted less blood because blood frightens him. Can cannibals even be afraid of blood? I don't know.
Does he have that phobia? There's a phobia with that, right? Called something about that?
Yeah, I'm 100% sure there is. I just don't know the name of it.
Yeah, but okay.
Never came out. That? It never came out and explicitly said he had a phobia of blood. That was his own words. I'm afraid of blood. I didn't want it.
It's so weird. Very like, weird. First of all, I'm glad that he was born tall and muscular, and I'm glad because I imagine he would be worse. The story will go longer, maybe with other things. But like, it's just so weird. Everything about him is just so weird.
Yeah,
He comes by his sins so honestly. I don't know what to say. And then, but he has weird.
I know.
It's like, I don't know. It's like, I really love bowling, but I can't stand
the sound of pins clacking. Pins,
right. Or like people. I don't know. People, but it's so weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So afraid of blood. It had to be the right cheek because that was farthest from the heart.
Yeah, sure. Whatever, man.
Now, Issy tried to just bite right into Renee's butt. But he quickly realized that the flesh is just too hard to bite into.
Oh, yeah.
It hurt his little jaw. Izzy decided to try a small fruit knife, and even that didn't work. So he gives up and heads to the market to purchase a real knife, kind of like a curved butcher knife. And of course it works. Izzy slices through the cheek, and immediately he's repulsed. Instead of finding bright red meat like he thought he'd find,
right.
He found what he described as a yellow Indian corn-like substance instead. It's the fat that he's seeing.
Oh, is that what we look like? Damn, my butt might have something wrong.
Yeah. That description is just so gross.
Yeah, very, very graphic.
He's got to cut much deeper to get to the red meat that he desires. And in a documentary I watched, Issy said he doesn't remember if when he got to that meat, he cut off a piece of that red meat or he just ripped it out with his fingers. Doesn't matter, I guess, because he got the meat he wanted and he ate it. He said it tasted like a nice roasted pork. I'm never eating pork chops again. And I love pork chops.
I ate it last night.
And fuck this guy. From there, Issy continued to cut and to eat. Some of the meat he ate raw. Some he cooked, like one of Renee's breasts, which he said swelled up while it was being cooked. And when he tried to eat it, it was way too greasy, which he didn't like. So he threw it away. And some of the meat he ate seasoned with salt and mustard. He said the meat was best this way, cooked and seasoned just right with the salt and mustard. Renee's nose, her nose, part of her lip, her whole right thigh, nearly all of her left thigh. I mean, we're talking down to the bone, nothing left. Both of her breasts gone. And of course, the number he did on her butt. And there's more. And this is the thing, like you said, Oscar, this guy's not ashamed or afraid to talk about what he did, no matter how disgusting or fucked up and depraved it was.
And well, to him, it isn't. That's the whole thing, right? Yeah. It isn't disgusting. Too.
He cut out and tried to eat Renee's anus, but it smelled bad. So he fried it up and tried again, but it still smelled bad. So he threw it away. He tried to eat the clitoris right off the body, but he couldn't do it because it stretched like rubber. So again, he cut it out, fried it up, and popped it into his mouth. It was delicious. He said it tasted sweet. He masturbated with one of Renee's severed hands. He played with her intestines and took hold of her bladder and her womb. Nothing was left undisturbed. Everything was violated. For 3 days, Issy feasted on and desecrated Renee. And whatever meat he didn't eat, the police would later find stacked up in Issy's refrigerator. Now, as I said, I was selective on what photos I included in the show notes, but one thing I did include is a black and white photograph showing how Issy laid out on paper plates a lot of the meat he acquired from Renee, about 15 pounds in total. Mm-hmm. And all I could say is that if you see this picture and you don't already know what you're looking at, pieces of a human, you'd probably look at the picture and think, oh, nice spread. We got a bunch of steaks over here, some nice ham over there, maybe some cooked chicken breast. But no, it's none of that. It's a person.
I mean, we are bags of meat, right?
An infernal meal. Now, after Renee's body became too spoiled for Issy to enjoy, June is really hot in Paris and there's no air conditioning. You could literally smell that sentence. After he was done with her, he chopped her up in his bathroom, removing her head, arms, and legs from the torso. And he placed the pieces into two suitcases. Issy then called a cab and requested to be brought to a park near the university he attended. When the cab driver showed up at Izzy's apartment, he helped Issy with the suitcases. Remember, this is a small little guy, right?
Yeah.
When the driver went to help Issy with the bags, he commented how heavy the bags were, and he jokingly asked if Issy had a body in them. Awkward. Issy said no, the bags were filled with books. So the cab brought him to the park, and off Issy went into the park with his bags. Now, we know Issy's weak, right? We've said that a bunch of times. So here he is walking through the park, struggling with these big suitcases. Mind you, it's light outside. People literally saw this strange little man first struggling with and then dumping his suitcases by a lake. We're not talking about a criminal mastermind here, listeners. After Issy dumped the suitcases by the lake, he was too exhausted to push them into the lake. So he kind of left him there. And then he stopped and he watched the sunset over the lake. He saw an old man walking with a child, all these beautiful sunset colors. And he just kind of stood there taking it all in. And while he was mesmerized by the scenery, a stranger, a man came up behind him, curious about the suitcases. And the man asked, "Are these yours?" To which Issy said, "No." Now, if Issy said they were in fact his, the man likely would have left the suitcases alone. And the rest of the story might have been completely different. But because Issy claimed they weren't his, the man, of course, opened the suitcase.
Right.
And inside, he found bloody bedsheets. The man yelled out, "Murderer!" And in response, Issy just walked away.
Is this Shakespeare in the Park?
Yes.
Okay.
He just walks away. Now, the police were called, and a call for witnesses was put out. And quickly, the cab driver stepped forward and said, "Yeah, I picked up a weird little Japanese guy carrying suitcases, and I picked him up from here." These are my words, not the cab driver's, but pretty much that's how it went down. Right. Obviously, it didn't take the police long to find Issy. And just 4 days later, he was arrested. Now, he spent 2 years in a French prison awaiting trial. During this time, he was analyzed by three different psychologists, and they all deemed him criminally insane. When Issy finally went in front of a French judge to be tried, the judge declared him legally insane and unfit to stand trial. All the charges were dropped, and he was to be held indefinitely in a French mental institution. But before his treatment could even begin, the French public went crazy because this monster was being held in their country and being supported on their dime. Remember, this was huge news in Paris. Issy's face plastered all across newspapers and in the media, detailing every little nasty piece of his crime. Basically, the French people had spoken. They were not happy about Issy being in their country, so he was deported back to Japan.
Right.
There's also some background talk about Issy's father stepping in and seriously greasing some palms in order to get his son back.
Makes sense.
Yeah, in order to get his son back home. But whatever the case, Issy was sent back to Japan, where he was remanded to a mental hospital in Tokyo. Now, Japanese authorities had basically made up their minds that Issy was not criminally insane. He was evil, sure, but not insane. Instead, they believed he suffered from a personality disorder. And because the charges were dropped in France, Issy's court documents were sealed, including information gathered from the psychiatrist. And therefore, the records could not be released to Japanese authorities. So they had no choice but to let Issy Sagawa free. So again, without receiving any treatment or help, after just 15 months in the Tokyo hospital, on August 12, 1986, Issy Sagawa checked himself out of the hospital, and he's been a free man ever since.
What a loophole.
Yeah, oh man. Just barely 3 years time for killing, raping, and eating a woman. Sweet Lady Justice must have been on vacation. Talk about injustice, right? And almost as soon as Issy checked himself out of the hospital, that's when the media started calling. You see, the heinousness of Issy's crimes made international news. Everyone wanted to know who the little Japanese cannibal was and how he was allowed to go free. So
his stature was probably made him famous too. The fact that he looks probably harmless to a lot of people. Right.
So Issy capitalized on his newfound infamy as the Kobe cannibal. He traveled around doing the lecture circuit and the talk show circuit, mesmerizing audiences with stories about his urges and his crimes, both in great detail. He's been interviewed countless times and has been featured in numerous documentaries. Some of the documentary titles are Cannibal Superstar and The Cannibal That Walked Free.
Yeah, right.
Excuse Me for Living, and my favorite, Interview with a Cannibal.
Excuse me for living is like really funny to me.
Fuck. You can't make this shit up, you know? He's a prolific author. He's written 20 books, a lot of them detailing firsthand his crimes. Right. For a while, he enjoyed, now get this, the privilege of being a restaurant critic, and he wrote food reviews for a popular Japanese magazine called Spa.
I'm guessing vegan restaurants, right?
Oh, of course. I've left some publicity photos from Issy's time as a foodie in the show notes. Completely tasteless stuff, pun. A cannibal getting paid to do food reviews. Doesn't get any weirder than that.
That is a mark of like, man, that's like, you can't put that in a fiction setting. No one will believe you. It will be like, this is too ridiculous. You can't put this in this movie. You can't write this in this book. It's too ridiculous. But it happened in real life.
No one will believe it. Exactly. No. So does it get any weirder for? Yes. For Issy Sagawa, of course it does. He was paid to reenact the Little Red Riding Hood story on film.
Oh my God.
Or he played the wolf, of course.
Oh yeah. Okay. No,
and I've seen grandma. Excerpts. I've seen excerpts from this little film. It's horrible. It's just, He's in a wolf costume. It's ridiculous. He was paid to eat raw meat on film. The meat's juices, the blood just dripping down his face.
Mm-hmm.
Izzy Sagawa even has a short run, had a short run as a porn star. And it's reported, I haven't seen the films, but it's reported, it's
too ridiculous,
that Izzy would fake biting his female co-stars while he reenacted scenes from his actual crime. What kind of twisted shit is that?
No clue.
Now, in an excellent Vice documentary on Izzy Sagawa, they featured a woman that starred in a porn with Izzy and her reaction after she's told and shown. Remember, Izzy photographed his crimes. After she was told and shown what Izzy had done by Izzy himself after they had sex. I mean, talk about exploitation.
Yeah.
This poor boy, it was really uncomfortable to see.
Yeah, that sounds really bad. Like, it sounds like I'm sure it's still done today, but it's just one of those things that, like, were just so normalized probably back then.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's probably like a very common thing, especially like as you go down into the more gray areas of society, like pornography. Like,
yeah,
I both can see it. And like, it's so fucked up to hear it though. Yeah.
Yeah. And they show you this poor woman was so clearly shaken and visibly upset from having just fucked a literal monster.
Right.
And Izzy's done a lot of art. He claims to have a manager that sells his paintings internationally. And I got to say, he is quite the artist. A lot of his paintings are actually really good. You can find them online. Check them out.
Really?
And Oscar, you'll like this one. Izzy published his own grotesque manga book featuring pictures that he drew of the crimes he committed.
Now, I did check this out.
It's really gross shit. And of course, I left some snippets of Izzy's manga in the show notes. Oscar, what did you think of the manga?
I mean, I didn't read any of them. Obviously, I didn't buy it or anything. I'm not going to either. Usually manga, I have to like the art style. And I don't like this kind of style, honestly.
Yeah. So you've seen the pictures.
Yes, I've seen pictures.
And, ugly shit.
I
saw it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a fan, but obviously the material and the fact that you know where the material is from definitely adds to the novelty of it.
Absolutely.
A different kind of pun for you.
Now, thankfully, eventually, the media hype surrounding the Kobe cannibal died out, or more like dried up.
Mm-hmm.
Izzy lost both of his parents in 2005, which hit him incredibly hard. And like after an accident? Natural.
Oh, in the same year. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And after their deaths, Izzy paid off all of his parents' creditors, and then he just kind of slipped away into nothingness. In 2013, he suffered a cerebral infraction, which left him with permanent nervous system damage. And today, Izzy's 72 years old, living alone somewhere in the suburbs of Tokyo, and he's quite ill. It's reported that he also suffers from diabetes and that he has had two heart attacks in the year 2015. Wow. Today, Izzy has no job, no friends, no money, hardly any publicity. And the only one that ever shows up anymore is his freaky brother, June. June and the odd caregiver here and there. He's now basically a man waiting to die.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unclear if Izzy is truly finished with his flesh-eating obsession, even though he is old and quite infirm. I mean, it's highly unlikely he could ever pull something like that off again, what he did to Renee, but it's not without wanting. In an article published on allthatsinteresting.com in August 2021, so just a few months ago, Izzy said, quote, "The desire to eat people becomes so intense in and around June when women start wearing less and showing more skin." Now, keep in mind, this is August 2021. The quote goes on, quote, "Just today, I saw a girl with a really nice derriere on my way to the train station. When I see things like that, I think about wanting to eat someone again before I die. What I'm saying is, I can't bear the thought of leaving this life without ever tasting that derriere that I saw this morning or her thighs. I want to eat them again while I'm alive so that I could at least be satisfied when I die." End quote. See, there's no shred of remorse here. He's completely open and honest.
I mean, it makes sense. It tracks with everything he said before.
Yeah. And I guess, do you got to respect that just a little bit, his honesty? I don't know.
I mean, I'm not saying. Yeah, it's one of those weird things when people say, like, I agree with anything a bad person does. But like, he has never not been forthcoming. Right. Like, it's so weird, you know. Yeah. I have to say something positive about that, you know.
Yeah, and to this day, Issei Sagawa has never really shown any significant remorse for killing and eating Renee Hartevelt, his friend.
Right.
One time he did say that the only thing he was really sorry for was not being able to eat Renee while she was actually still alive.
Really? So he wanted to be like more vicious about it. Like, because alive is, you know, it's like when you said before, like, yeah, he, you know, he raped her, but he, I mean, he was, it was not really actually, so he didn't. I mean, it's raping a corpse, but you know, technically it's not. And there's a big difference. Like, I really rather not the victim feel it. I'd rather not them go through it at all, but you know, it was kind of nicer. Oh, not nice, but nicer that she didn't feel any of it, you know.
Thank God.
But I mean, he wanted her alive though, right? And maybe the fact that they bonded, right? Maybe leads to him not, you know, like, it's harder to kill or do something to a live thing than a death. I don't know, maybe.
I think his ultimate thing was to eat living meat,
right?
Living flesh, definitely. Still alive, you know.
He never got the ultimate thing he wanted.
Apparently the
ultimate
not.
High, maybe the ultimate bite, the ultimate meal. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, to his own demise, Sagawa went on record tauntingly, smugly saying, quote, "I would like to invite any woman who wants to kill me to step forward. Beautiful women only. That would be the ideal way for me to die. Maybe they could shoot me up with morphine so that I don't feel any pain. Although I guess pain is part of the pleasure. Dying instantly is boring, so I want to savor the process of being killed. An alternative would be to drown in female saliva. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be covered all over in women's spit? If I could die drowning in it, that would be my ultimate dream come true. I'm a cowardly man who killed another person, yet I can't face killing myself. So I guess dying at the hands of a woman would be my way to redemption," end quote.
It kind of sounds like it would be, though. Although I would say then maybe have a family member of the victim kill him instead of any woman, but whatever. What a weird...
There's no way to describe it. I mean...
It's beyond honest. He's like, I fucked up. I should revenge should be taken on me, guys. This is my offer. What? Yeah. Who does that? I mean, again, weird kudos I'm giving him. I don't want to. I'm just saying I don't support this, but damn, it's so weird. Yeah.
And for me, the saddest thing about this whole story, this whole unbelievable story, is that this poor, innocent young woman, Renee Hartevelt, right? She gets totally lost in 100%. The Sagawa circus. Gone.
Yeah. Every victim like that happens. Yeah.
Yeah. There's hardly any mention of her online at all outside of being Issei's victim and the horrendous crime scene photos. There's no mention of her family, her hopes, her dreams. I can't even begin to imagine what her family went through. Nothing. There's nothing. She's totally overshadowed by this creepy little monster, totally used and thrown away, literally for this dickhead's pleasure. That's all she's become. That's her legacy. And it's a fucking shame.
Yeah, and for sure.
Finally, I'll end this episode with yet another quote from Issei himself. I'm telling you, this clown is so quotable.
He's the Winston Churchill of cannibals.
Cannibals.
You know how Winston Churchill, he's like so quotable. He said like 50 quotes a day, but when he was in power. I'm like, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So this quote is from that Vice documentary I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Quote, "Sometimes I wonder why I did such a horrible thing. Maybe it's because I came from another planet or another dimension, and I accidentally fell to Earth like a meteorite, disguised as a baby crying on the street. My mother walked by and took pity on me. I must have come from a place of cannibals, and I'm the only one of my kind who exists on this planet." End quote.
Yeah. What a weirdo.
What a weirdo indeed.
I mean, the whole alien thing or the, you know, a place full of cannibals. I mean, in nature, there are that too. In insects, especially other things too. They have been known to doing that. I almost got that wrong. I'm glad I didn't mention the animal. But there are others that do that and that have done that. Either to survive or because they didn't want the kid. It could be deformed. There's so many reasons why that happens in nature. Yep. And that's the way he treats it. It's like nature. It really is. And that's what makes me feel like it is not so much nurture. It's just that nurture didn't stop it. That's the problem. Nurture didn't probably enhanced it accidentally and did not stop it. Did not know the signs. Did not imagine this could ever happen. But I feel it's like it's always been nature.
So
like
that
he was born wanting this, like the way you're born gay or you're born whatever, you know, like it's not a choice, you know.
So
like
is a there thing. Going on that note? Because I don't have the answer. I tend to lean more towards nature as well. But what does that mean? Does that mean there's a fucking cannibal DNA gene?
I don't think it works that way. But it works the same way alcoholism can be trans, like can be genetic. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if it's a gene, but we know this is not new, right? Where like alcoholism and family history can be passed down and can be more susceptible.
Addiction to in general.
Future. Right. So like that, I think it's that. You know, addiction, but a different type. Whatever difference that is between a cannibal and alcohol, this guy has the other one, you know, the latter, you know, or the former.
Then what about his brother June? So I is it just? Thing.
I mean, this goes. I mean, this probably fits not more in hand about this family in general, maybe. And you add the repression, and you add the fact that, you know, no psychologist until you. It's way too late, and there's no help. There's no talk about it at all because of repression and times and. We had all this stuff and probably they were cloistered and sheltered when they shouldn't have been. There's life is not throwing enough fucking curveballs at them to figure things. I don't know what. I'm just saying. It seems like nurture didn't help at all is my point.
Got it.
And, you know, the life didn't do it for him. But I mean, this still came out like, I'm pretty sure June doesn't hurt anybody with his own thing. That's the whole point. He hurts himself. But like, it's like, I'm sure that if there's a way to do it, like, honestly, and as forthcoming as possible, he would do that. He would approach a woman and ask, can I eat you for a while? He knows that will never happen.
Yeah.
It's just a weird, honest murderer.
Such a strange story, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. Sad story too. Disgusting, sad, strange, all the above. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask, have you ever thought of eating a person?
No, I have not.
Yeah, I haven't either.
No, it's never like a real thing. No.
Would you eat a person?
Yeah. So and it always comes up, you know, when you think about it. Like I've had girlfriends ask me that too, you know, when they get weird.
my girlfriends like, get weird. Yeah. They like ask
if we're stuck in a mountain or something, that's would awesome. You eat me? I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to eat you. Things like that. You know, I don't know. Girlfriends ask me the weird things. But in general, yeah, you think of the Donner Party. I understand what they went through. You think of that soccer team, I think it was. Oh, rugby, sorry.
I think it was rugby, yeah.
I understand for sure. There's a few, more than a few. What's the guy who did the Raven? Fuck, Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan
stories Poe. That involves cannibalism, you know, as a last resort, you know. So it's not uncommon, but like, would I in those situations? I would. An extreme.
So in extreme life-threatening situations, you would have no problem eating a bitch.
No problem. I mean, it would be morally problemsome. No, it would be a problem, but like, I have to do it.
Okay, so you would have a moral objection to it, but you know you have to do this to survive.
I'm sure it'll be gross, too.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it. I mean, the way he described him, you know, what's her name? See, this is bad. I forgot her name.
Renee Hartevelt.
Renee. Him describing how Renee tasted good and bad. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I make a palate of it. I don't think I'll have a review of my crewmate or whatever I'm in, whatever situation. But like, yeah, I mean, I would eat him.
See, for me, I don't know. Because I've had friends ask this before. We've played this game before. Would you?
Right.
And I think for me, it would come down to where I'm at in life. Like if I'm an 80-year-old man and I got half a foot in the grave anyway, hey, I would lay down and die before eating a person. I'd go to the pearly gates with a clear conscience, knowing that I didn't eat a motherfucker. I'm safe, right?
But yeah.
If I'm my age now and I have a wife and young kids.
Uh-huh. That you have to go back to?
That I have to go back to. I would see myself, yes, partaking in.
Yeah, but don't you think that the pearly gates have bylaws to allow for that in emergencies?
I don't know. I think they would weigh it.
You don't think,
at
don't
that
think
point.
There's a clause? I mean,
maybe they would weigh it at that point. I don't know. I don't have
do you
the
really,
answers.
Do you really think? I mean, okay, well, then that's a different question.
That's my thinking as of right now. You know, if I'm old and I'm dying anyway, I'm going clean. I'm just laying down and die. But if I got stuff going on that I need to get back to my family, let's do it. Okay. I'd do it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's about myself. Do I want to live or not? You know? I'm not saying it's selfish fine. Or not, yeah. but like I want to live. And chances are, like in the extreme situations, you would, even if you do it stupidly and you fail, you would do what you can to stay alive. Like any dog, if it's dying, it will defend itself before getting killed, you know? Like it's like that. Like I would kill probably the biggest guy too, so he won't kill me.
Oh, you've really thought about this.
No, I'm just saying in this situation, I've always been the smaller, pudgier guy. So I'm like, I'm not going to take chances, but no big fucker guy. But take him out first. Establish dominance and eat the most out of one person.
There you go.
See, I'm trying to save. I don't have to kill the next person. Maybe we'll get saved before the next one. You know? Just saying, got to think about it.
It's interesting. No, it's, you know, hopefully, God willing, we never have to experience this. But, yeah. You know, it's interesting rare. To think about.
It's very rare. When people die of thirst and or hunger, it's usually because you're a prisoner of war or a prisoner of general or whatever, kidnapped in some way, you're shackled by some serial killer or you're on the desert or you're by yourself or you're destitute in some fashion. You're by yourself, though. It's rare to be by yourself and starving. I mean, it's rare to be with people, sorry, and starving and stuck with people. It's like diner party mm-hmm. situation. You know, it's very, there's, you know, you win the lottery before that happens.
Right.
What I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
yeah, but a fun story. Interesting story. I like how it's short and sweet. And I don't mean that in a punny way. But yeah, it was nice.
I got to tell you, there was a few times writing this script that I literally got a little sick thinking about how am I going to phrase this? How am I going to write this, rewriting a sentence, you know, about certain things he did. And it kind of made me nauseous, man. And a few nights ago, we were doing it, even though it's ice cold out, I still barbecue on the back deck. And we had a couple different people over and I had different cuts of meats on a tray. I had some fillets, I had a ribeye, I had some pork chops. And, you know, because I can never cook a single fucking meal here at my house because everyone eats something different. And that's just the kind of guy I am.
Is it picky?
Very picky. Very picky. And that's the type of guy and father I am where I'll make everyone their individual dinner. So I had this whole tray of meat, you know, the fillets and the ribeye still had blood kind of at the bottom of the plate that I had them all on. And mm-hmm. I'm tonging them onto the grill. And I did get nauseous looking at that meat and thinking about, because I've just been thinking nothing about Issy Sagawa for the last couple of weeks doing this script. And I made myself nauseous. Like I looked at that meat and I thought of that picture, which you can see in the notes, the one I called the infernal meal. Yeah. That's all I could think about, man. And I didn't want to eat it anymore.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So anyway, totally. Listen, happy holiday. Merry Christmas, listeners. Now,
on that note, have a fun meal with your family.
Maybe you want to go vegan this year. I don't know. But
I'm not.
We hope you enjoyed the episode and we will catch you in the new year.
Side. Oh, yeah. Well, and the new year is better than the flip side. Anyway, on the flip side of this year, I'll see you then.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Why are you laughing?
I'm still in shock. I'm still in disbelief.
Do I look that bad in the morning? This is my morning. I know you've had a whole day already, but like, goddamn.
But dude, I literally think it's been years since I've actually seen you in the sunlight.
So exaggerating. I saw you on Halloween, bitch.
Oh, true.
Yeah, you're right. It does feel that way.
I just feel like our friendship is exclusively a night friendship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, you hear stories. I mean, I'm sure you had these because you were a delinquent. When you have like friends that do drugs a lot or you connect with drugs, like you see them, you never see them around school. You'll never see them like in the daytime or with your parents. You're just going to see those fuckers at night at some house party, right?
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. In the daytime, they look like pale versions of themselves.
Dude, you're a vampire? Okay. Oh, my God. Mm. So, unfortunately, again, I'm under a time crunch. I got to be done for Nico.
Yes. Yes, of course. Let's just get going.
Jump right into it. Let's get a sip and a vape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I brought my emergency big mug, Christmas mug that's like huge. So.
Oh, dude.
I usually use the smaller ones, but then I just refill them. But like, no, I don't have to refill them. All right. Let's do this in five. We're recording.
Yes. Yes.
Five. Four. Oh, man. Okay. I need to look up. Do I sound groggy?
No. No. No, you look very vibrant. You look very awake.
That's it. It's all front. My ready body is lying to me. Lying
ready, ready to rape the world. Don't put that in the outtakes. Beep.
Beep the world. What could he mean?
What is he
Hitler
trying to say?
Hitler the world? What's so bad? N-word the world? Oh, what does he say? Everybody's wondering, why would he beep that?
Why would he beep that?
You know, that's how that would go. You know, sometimes some things are beeped and you're like, what was the bad word in that part? You know, you ever notice that in movies?
Yes.
And you're like, what did he say? Fuck? Was it fuck? It didn't sound like it was fuck. And then, like, you could tell. I'm like, what was it? Did he say fuck? Like, did he say the C word?
Ooh.
And you're like, just trying to figure it out.
You know what drives me nuts about movies?
Everything.
And I want to find out why this is. If people are talking on the phone in movies, they never say goodbye. Did you ever notice that? Ever.
Yeah. It's because most movies, 90% of movies, American movies, are made in LA. And the way you're talking is that it's Midwestern nice.
You really think that's what it is?
I kind of think it is that.
So you've noticed this?
Never.
Like, I'm always just saying goodbye, or if I'm talking to family, love you.
First of all, I can show you a good compilation of people saying goodbye on the phone. There is a lot of them. It's just that there's so little compared to the grand majority. They don't say goodbye. They just want to get through it. Like, it's I don't know. Huh. I don't know why either. It's just a nice. They don't even think about it, and they're not nice. Like, they don't say goodbye on their phones with their mom and their agents and shit.
I guess not. Mm-hmm. I always meant to Google that to see if there's actually something written about it out there.
I did a rewatch of West with the West Wing this year, mm-hmm. and it's on HBO. And that's one thing I noticed this time around is that there's a lot of phone calls, you know, a lot of phone scenes all the time. Every episode, I think, has at least one, if not like more. So, and I noticed that they don't say goodbye. And it's like, but that's even worse than that. They even just cut themselves short sometimes. They're like, they don't acknowledge that the conversation has ended. The other person just hangs up. Fuck this guy. I'm done with that. Like, it feels like, all right, you know, because they're so busy and they're trying to save the country. So, you know, it just feels like no one says goodbye.
Yeah. Like, we're too important to say goodbye. We're too busy to say goodbye. Drives me
nuts. Burning bridges is what they're doing. If they did that with me, I'm like, I'm not fucking calling this guy again.
Exactly. Fuck this guy.
Fuck this guy. And yeah.
All right, so I had to get that out there.
Yeah, no, it's a good. I like that. It's a good. I thought, because I thought of it before. I'm with you. Totes with you.
Okay. Bling. All right.
What was that?
It's my getting ready.
Is your getting ready part? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Ready for the countdown?
Yes.
Wait, hold on. I'm out of it. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
But otherwise, do you think it came out okay?
Yeah, I think it turned out better. It always happens this way, doesn't it?
Maybe we should do that from now on, is actually get together and dry run an episode and then come back the next day and actually record it.
Yeah, but that requires actual... I mean, don't get me wrong. I love that idea. I do like that idea.
But it requires extra time.
whole extra time. That's 2 day setup, you know, recording, which is... Again, a fine, and I think it is doable. I think just you and I were too manic. You know, I'm not very, what do you call it? Calendar, or that's not the right word. I'm not very organized with my time as much as I want to be. And you don't ever have time. Not ever. You know what I mean? Not as much as you would like. It's not as much as you would like. So I think it's possible. I think it's very doable. I think it's an achievable goal completely. It's just that, it took us a while to get here to even suggest that. And B, it feels like it'll be hard, but I think we can do it.
Okay. Let's plan for that. If you can.
Yeah.
the other thing I was thinking, what are your thoughts on a new intro bumper music for Patreon of your completely your own creation?
My own creation. I'm not like a musician though.
Oh, it's up to you. I don't know. I thought maybe you might want to play with it. Take a crack at it. Yeah.
Crack at it. Take a crack at it. It sounds like a drug invented saying, right? Like, take a crack at it. You took a crack at it and just throws it at a crack at it, pops it open. And then somehow that said something, meant something else.
Well, I just thought give you a chance to be creative, do something new for the intro.
Yeah, I just don't know anything about composition. Nothing real about it. But sure, I'll give it a go. Like an intro, you mean? Like an actual intro?
Yeah, like remember the one you used to do? The very first intro that we kept for years.
I remember.
When the devil gets, whatever. Yeah. And do something like that again. Something cool like that, just for Patreon.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give it a crack.
See what you, I mean, if you don't want to, you don't have to.
No, I know. I'm just letting you know I'm not an actual music guy.
No, I know.
Just letting you know.